States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. On this week's episode in our education segment, Janet Hannan will be here to talk about the importance of clarity in teaching. And before that, Judy Wardrop, who is the author of the Connection magazine article 2006 Sport Horse Breeding, joins us to talk about pedigrees and function. So all that to come. But first of all, one item of news. If you're looking for education during the off-season, please make sure to check out the USDF education calendar to find all approved USDF university accredited programs. The brief list of the education programs currently being offered in February, a continuing education and freestyle judging program is being offered on the 13th in Dallas, Texas. The weekend of February 20th, the Central Arizona Riding Academy is offering the B session of the USDFL program in Santan Valley, Arizona. And the Valley Oaks chapter of the California Dressage Society is offering a continuing education in dressage judging program, which they are calling Upgrade Your Judging Eye, and that takes place in Wilton, California. And finally, an instructor training program workshop on lunging is being offered in Hillsboro, Oregon, from February the 27th to the 28th. And a complete list of the USDF education programs is available in the show notes accompanying this episode. And a reminder that additional opportunities may be offered through your local GMO, so please be sure to check their calendars also online. You can also find books and educational items geared to dressage riders on the USDF website. Just check out eTrack, the USDF's online learning center, as well as the online store. And our first guest this week is Judy Wardrop, who is the author of the Connection magazine article 2006 Sport Horse Breeding. And she talks about pedigrees and function as it relates to sport horse breeding. Judy joins us now to talk about a little bit of the background to this article, really, and drill a little bit deeper for us. Judy, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much, Chris. Glad to be here.
Well, the article is, of course, about sport horse breeding, but you're going to help us read between the lines on this and how to explore a little bit further than what you see on the page.
Well, that's my hope, because in the long run, the better decisions we as people make, the better life is for horses. So that's my goal.
Right. Well, just explain a little bit, give us the overview of the article that's in the current issue of the USDF Connection magazine, as I said in my introduction. But tell us a little bit more, a little bit about the article so people know what to expect before we unpack a little bit more information for them.
Well, the article was focused on trends, fads, fashions, the differences, how one can look at it, at things and see whether it's a short-term fad or whether it's a tangible pattern and whether that pattern is beneficial. And I interviewed several people around the world at different levels about whether breeders, riders, trainers, coaches, about patterns and what they see as trends rather than just fads, and almost all of them were not exuberant about fads and thought that they were detrimental.
So we want to get past the marketing and hype and the fashion trends,
yes,
then, Judy. So give us some ideas of what people should be looking for to really unveil what is hidden behind those pages.
Well, there, first of all, I think the main thing is a mindset of not just believing everything that's in an advertisement, whether it be for a stallion or horse for sale or whatever. I mean, if the difference between human genetics and horse genetics are not all that much different, and yet we would look at a human family and not expect the siblings to be built exactly the same and have exactly the same talents, yet when we look at advertising for horses, that is exactly what is sort of preached to us as buyers or purchasers of breedings and etc. And it's, we need to have an evaluation system. that's objective, so we can say, okay, is that individual that I'm looking at a good representative of those bloodlines? If you have a horse with a fabulous pedigree, but he is not carrying the good characteristics of that bloodline, he's not likely something you want to breed to. He's not likely something you want to buy. It's certainly not qualities you'd want in a mare, in your broodmare band, if you were looking to breed. So we need a combination of pedigree and a system of analysis, to me, to make the best choices.
Give us some tools for that.
Sorry?
Give us some tools for that, Judy, as to how we can walk through this.
Well, there are, if it's a stallion you're evaluating, you can look at his performance record. You can look at how well he did to what level, but also how consistent he was in as a way of evaluating soundness to a degree. But over the years, I've developed a system of evaluating horses from using objective terms from a functional perspective, and that is, to me, what is a really good combination with pedigree, because I started out as a pedigree person, and then I couldn't explain why, say, horses like Salinero, who probably won more awards than any dressage horse ever, his full brother, who was shorter than him, was actually a Grand Prix show jumper, because he was built different, and the ability to make the mechanical analysis of why he was a jumper and Salinero was a dressage horse should be valuable tools for people. I teach that in clinics and seminars. I also write some articles about that, and I have written some ebooks that are available on my website, because my goal is that to help people make the best decisions so that horses benefit in the long run, because we don't breed good quality horses over a long period of time, then we have a problem in the industry.
So really, the readers and potential buyers, Judy, need to look a little bit further than what they're seeing, as I said, on the page. And it's really like, it's the let the buyer beware, of course, in terms of making those breeding choices. It's rather like buying a house, isn't it? I mean, the description is one thing, but the practical interpretation is another for the function of that horse.
Absolutely. And it's, how much sympathy do you have for the person who buys the house without having it inspected or an analysis of that house made when there's structural problems with it? It's a matter of doing your homework, not being lazy, not just accepting what's there, but looking beyond that if you want to make an informed decision. If you don't want to make an informed decision and are prepared to take the consequences of not doing your homework, that's fine, except that there is an entity that suffers the consequences. The house doesn't have any feelings or suffer any ramifications from you not doing your homework, but horses do.
Yes, exactly.
That makes sense.
Yes, of course. I think a lot of it comes down to experience and knowing where to turn to get a little bit more advice. I mean, you mentioned some resources that you have, but also, do they go to the breed organizations as well? Will they get reliable information and ready resources from them? What would you advise?
Well, the World Breeding Federation produces some information. And there are Breeding News for Sport Horses produces a stallion analysis, so you can look at, say, a particular stallion and see how many horses he's producing at the top level and all of those kind of things. But it's even then, all of those statistics, you have to sort through what does it mean. If you compare a horse like, although he's not a dressage horse, but Kumano, who only breeds on the farm fresh semen because his semen does not transport, he's going to have far fewer horses than some of the other horses that are breeding lots and lots of mares because they're frozen semen, they're transported semen, etc. How do you make a fair analysis or comparison of the two stallions? And how do you make a good choice as to does your mare fit this stallion or that stallion? Which choice do you make? If you're making the choice from a marketing perspective, then you've got, you look at breeding what's talked about in the article of trends, okay, like the popular stallion, but that may not be the right actual choice in the long run. It might let you market the offspring better early on while that stallion is still hot, but it doesn't necessarily in the long run help the industry, if that makes sense.
So what else should our listeners be aware of? What other tools and tips could you give us, Judy?
Well, I think that it, learning how to make an honest assessment of the horses that you're dealing with, whether that be your mare, the stallion's other offspring, those kind of things is key to it. Yes, you can look at the statistics of, you know, is this sire actually producing horses? But then you got, if you're looking at a young stallion, because maybe you can afford that stud fee where you couldn't afford his sire's stud fee, then you have to be able to look at that stallion and say, is he a good representative of his bloodlines? For instance, the Donnerhalls, they're doing really well. And the Donnerhall sons seem to be, for the most part, breeding on in the Donnerhall characteristics, which is great, but not, that's not always the case. So making a critical analysis at as many levels as you can probably narrows your odds, or improves your odds, rather, for producing the best quality offspring.
So, in other words, you cannot spend enough time researching and making sure that you've made the right choice for whatever the horse may have to do.
Exactly. Informed decisions, whether you're buying a car, a house, or making a breeding selection, is all about doing the background checking, the research, the homework. And the more time you put into and effort you put into or pay someone to do, the better your chances are of producing what you hope to produce.
Wonderful. Anything else you would like to add, Judy?
Not really, other than I think we all have to accept that we are the stewards for what happens in the horse industry. And if we are all lazy, and then we have a problem down the road.
All about preparation, the foundation for the future.
Absolutely.
With your sport, horse breeding. Well, thank you very much indeed for coming on the program.
No problem.
You can read Judy's article and her discussion with breeders on this topic in the USDF's Connection magazine, and the link to that article will be in our show notes accompanying this podcast. And next, we are joined by the USEF Senior Judge and Certified Instructor through Fourth Level, Janet Hannon, who's here to talk about the importance of clarity in teaching.
I think that clarity in teaching in general takes a fair amount of experience. However, if instructors are consistent with their plan and how they evaluate a student, I think that they can give a very effective lesson and have the student feel that it was a successful lesson and go home with some homework feeling empowered. So I always start with introduction. I give a little introduction, obviously, to who I am. And I try to get some history of the horse and rider and find out what their short and long-term goals are. Of course, the horse's goal is to have more treats, but what the rider's goals are. I check the tack, I look for the fit of the bit and the bridle, and importantly, I look for the saddle placement. Is the saddle too far forward, too far back, because this affects the horse's movement and the rider's balance in the saddle. Obviously, I check the stirrup length and check the girth. Sometimes there are other tack adjustment issues, but that's an individual situation. I'm always thinking about the training scale, and anyone with judging background and or certification background will use both the verbiage of the training scale and be thinking of the training scale. And this really adds clarity to any presentation. I look at all three gates to assess the correctness of the basics. This is where the holes in the training may be. I look at the tempo. I look at the rhythm of all three gates. Are they pure? This is where tension issues can affect the quality, and we see it in judging quite a bit, especially in the walk. I look for signs of harmony and relaxation and a working relationship between the horse and rider. Many horses are lacking in mental as well as physical suppleness and relaxation. I look at the bend and the flexion, both directions, both longitudinally and laterally. I ask myself, what is the horse's hollow and which is the horse's strong side? Which side are they softer to? Which side are they stiffer to? Horses are not, we don't think they're naturally ambidextrous, and neither are we. So definitely a sidedness will form through the training. On the opposite end of the spectrum from a horse that's too quick in the tempo, which I see fairly often, are horses that are behind the rider's aids and inactive with the hind legs. Keeping in mind the elements of the training scale, and feeling as though, not feeling as though, but knowing that ultimately we want our horses to be light and in self-carriage, I try to watch the whole warm-up, and if I haven't been able to watch the warm-up, then I'll ask them to show me the walk, trot, and canter both directions. I try not to interrupt, which is really hard, because obviously I like to talk, because the rider needs time to show me what they do, show me their horse. However, if they seem to be a little nervous and need some direction, or if I can't help but interrupt, I'll jump in, but I try really hard not to. I look to see that the horse is sound. Does the horse look sound and comfortable? I look at the horse through turns, circles, observe the balance. Does the horse lean in? Does the horse pop a shoulder to the outside? Do the haunches swing in or out through corners and on circles, which we see quite a bit when judging as well? I look at the horse and rider through transitions. Does the rider do very many transitions or not? I often say that the transitions are the expression of the connection, and they improve the connection, so the transitions are very important. I try to look at some patterns to test the rider, or I will give the rider a pattern to quickly get a snapshot of their aiding system and give me more feedback on the correctness of the training. An example would be a leg yield in the walk with the horse's nose to the wall, or a leg yield on a circle facing the inside of the circle with me standing in the middle. It is very clear through looking at either one of these whether or not the horse is correctly on the aids and how the rider sits on the horse. And very importantly, I look at the rider's balance and equitation. This is an area that's sorely neglected at times, and often in clinics or lessons, the horse's training is addressed, but not always the rider's position, which can really cause many of the issues that the horse may be experiencing. I've had several people over the years tell me if they cannot find anyone locally to give them lunge lessons anymore, which is quite unfortunate. When I learned, I can't tell you how many lunge lessons I took. And most riders you see that have good seats or are well-balanced have been on the lunge line and or have ridden without stirrups quite a bit to develop that depth and balance in their seat. One suggestion is that if you cannot find someone to lunge you locally, perhaps you and a friend could share a lunge horse or lunge each other. It's an idea. I try to make it clear to the student what I'm seeing and how I would fix the issues or problems. I try to identify what is good about the training and what needs improvement. I address their positional challenges and give them exercises to improve their seats. An example would be, if they're comfortable with it, riding without stirrups. Even 5 or 10 minutes a day can make a huge difference. I try to always make lessons and clinics positive. Check the tone of my voice. I noticed years ago in teaching in an arena that had poor acoustics that my voice had gotten very strong and sounded very harsh, which really can shut some people down. You have to be sure the rider feels they've been given some tools to take home and be successful with. Sometimes, especially if someone's goals are ambitious or they're juniors or young riders, I might quiz them and see what they know and how extensive their background is. Sometimes they might know the answer to a question but do not know how to verbalize the concepts. This is quite important to be able to verbalize the concepts, not just intuitively feel them or do them. And I see that a lot in teaching. Someone is a very good rider, but in terms of really being able to express in many different ways how they do something, they may not be clear on how to do that, or it may be something they need to practice. I tend to give homework assignments, and the amount of homework I give depends on when I will see them again and if they have videotaped or not. Sometimes if someone says too much in a lesson, which I'm often guilty of, if you videotape, you have a chance of really absorbing all the information. But if you don't, you can miss quite a bit. I've also had other people take notes at the end of the lesson, you know, get off and go write down some notes, which is helpful. I try to make sure that the student feels empowered and not downtrodden at the end of the lesson. If they do, for me anyway, I feel as though personally it has not been successful. I always ask if anyone has questions, either in a break during the lesson or at the end, and try to leave a little extra time for this. If during a lesson someone seems to be confused or non-responsive, I will oftentimes stop them and ask them what they heard versus what I have said. Sometimes it's quite surprising what someone will hear. I'll give you an example. Years ago, I had a lady I'd taught for many years, and I noticed that her horse was a little slow to answer her canter aid. And so I asked her, I said, okay, Marianne, please tell me how you aid the canter. You know, what is the order? And she looked at me very sincerely, and she said, well, I aid the canter, and then I half halt, and then he goes. And I said, would you repeat that, please? And she said the same thing again. And I looked at her and I said, wow, okay, I've taught you for many years, and this is the first time I've noticed that truly your order of aiding was out of sequence. So perhaps you should fire me, which she didn't do, but we had a laugh about it because that was someone I taught for a long time. And I really realized that she did not understand how I had taught her to aid the canter. So what I'm saying is that someone can hear something different than what was your intention for something you've explained to them. I pretty much always use a sound system because I've found that very oftentimes many people are hard of hearing, and when we think they didn't understand or they're not trying to do something we've asked them to do, they really do not hear us. I personally sometimes will teach, I've got a T-shirt that's got a large white T printed on the back, which allows me to check the straightness of the rider and see visually if they're in the center or not. Also, if they videotape, it's like a beacon, you can't miss it. If someone feels they're straight, but the horse's performance tells us that they're not, they can see what their body's doing. So I really try, especially with adults, to give them as much feedback as possible, because just hearing a command to change something isn't enough. Adults have to truly understand it and see it. In judging, we see many people get quite crooked or collapse in their lateral exercises, and this affects the horse's balance and their ability to be successful. We hear oftentimes in lessons, riders being reminded not to pull on the inside rein. Well, this ability to stay centered and balanced allows the riders not to depend on the hands and ride much more correctly with their seat and legs. And in conclusion, if in a lesson you can cover these suggestions and really think about how the person learns and what they hear, you will have a successful lesson and or clinic. And I wish everybody much success and happy riding.
And our thanks to Janet Hannon and also to Judy Waldrop, our guest this week. If you have any suggestions for topics or guests that you would like to hear more about on the program, please email them to podcasts@usdf.org. And a reminder that auditor registration is still being accepted for the Adequan USDF FEI Level Trainers Conference with Stephen Clark, scheduled for March the 14th and the 15th at El Sueno Equestrian Center. That online registration is available through March the 4th, and then on-site registration will also be available starting Monday morning, March 14th. Also, 2016 USDF members should be taking advantage of the many member perks offered through the USDF Members Perk Partnership Program. Those include membership discounts for educational sites such as dressage.com, dressagemeetingonline.com, dressagetrainingonline.com. And product discounts are also available through Premier Equestrian, farmvet.com, and Dressage Extensions. Membership discounts are offered through US Rider, Rider Alert, and MyDressageStats.com. And all members also receive discounts on items through the USDF online store too. So check out everything that Member Perks partners have to offer by clicking on the link in this week's show notes accompanying the episode. That's it for this week. Thank you for joining us wherever you are in the world. And remember that the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.